This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
You are an old man who thinks in terms of nations and peoples. There are no nations. There are no peoples. There is only one holistic system of systems. One vast and immane, interwoven, interacting, multivariate, multinational dominion of dollars. And you have meddled with the primal forces of nature. And you will atone.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich, that's how it goes. Everybody knows.
Live from Toronto, Canada, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
And up and running for Sunday, September the 19th, 2010. In the last half hour of the show, it'll just be you, me, and the telephone. And I want to talk about coincidences. I want to share a story a little later. What happened during my two-day visit up in the Ottawa Valley? I won't go into a lot of details about why I was up there, except here's a tease for you. I'm actually investigating claims by an interesting individual that I've met that he actually has built. He won't use the term perpetual motion machine, but when you observe this thing, that is, in fact, what it appears to do. So while I was up there investigating this perpetual motion machine, interviewing various individuals, including some electronics engineers from the Ottawa Skeptics Group and a physics professor at the University of Ottawa, some amazing things happened to me. It was almost like someone had ripped out some pages from that very popular book in the 90s, The Celestine Prophecy. Do you remember that? All of these clues being laid at my feet as if it was God's way of telling me I'm on the right track. Coincidences in the last half hour of the show. Right now, a pleasure to welcome back to the program media scientist, a student, disciple of the great Canadian thinker Marshall McLuhan, and was later an archivist for Marshall McLuhan. And it's always a pleasure to have Nelson Thal back on the show. Hello, Nelson.
Hey, nice being here, Richard. Thanks for bringing us together.
Well, we are going to traipse through a potential minefield. It was this sort of discussion several years ago that some of my listeners remain convinced to this day was responsible for getting me turfed off the air of another radio station. Of course, I'm talking about the current occupant of the White House, President Barack Obama. And over the years, I've done a number of shows with people like Phil Berg, the former Assistant Attorney General of Pennsylvania, of course, who was one of the main figures, I guess, in the whole birther movement, and that was the theory that the president was not born in the United States, he was born in Kenya, therefore, under the Constitution, a mere technicality, some might say, but the law is the law, under the Constitution, ineligible to be president. Well, tonight, we're going to discuss whether, in fact, President Obama is a creation of the CIA. And my next guest has recently put together a fairly extensive three-part series and claims to have conclusive proof that Barack Obama Sr., Stanley Ann Dunham, Obama's mother, Lolo Sotoro, the Indonesian stepfather of Barack Obama, and Barack Obama himself all hold deep ties to the CIA and larger intelligence community. Wayne Madsen is a Washington, D.C.-based investigative journalist, author, and syndicated columnist. He's the editor of the online publication WayneMadsenReport.com. He's written for The Village Voice, The Progressive, Counterpunch, Online Journal, Multinational Monitor, News Insider, In These Times, and The American Conservative. His columns have appeared in the Miami Herald, Houston Chronicle, Philadelphia Inquirer, Columbus Dispatch, Sacramento Bee, Atlanta Journal-Constitution, among others. He's the author of The Handbook of Personal Data Protection, an acclaimed reference book on international data protection law, Genocide and Covert Operations in Africa. And, well, the list goes on and on and on. He's been invited to testify as a witness before the U.S. House of Representatives, the U.N. Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, and a terrorism investigation panel of the French government. He's had some 20, a U.S. naval officer. He managed one of the first computer security programs for the U.S. Navy. He subsequently worked for the National Security Agency, the Naval Data Automation Command, Department of State, RCA Corporation, and he is a member of the Society of Professional Journalists, Association for Intelligence Officers, and the National Press Club. Wayne Madsen, that's quite a CV, my friend. Welcome to The Conspiracy Show.
Well, much too much, but good to be with you.
Yeah, I was reading your three-part series on Obama CIA connections, and there's something in there that struck me. I'm not sure whether this was just sort of satirical or whether it's absolutely true that the president and vice president do not require a security check in order to hold office. Is that true?
Well, that's true. Not only the president and the vice president, but also elected members of Congress. The mere fact that they're elected by the people means that they're not required to undergo any sort of security background check. Now, their staffs are. Everyone from chiefs of staff to press secretaries, so forth and so on, are subject to a background investigation. But the successful candidate themselves are not required to undergo any sort of security check. I mean, who would be in a position to trump the voting public if they say somebody found something? That's not that would be a violation of the Constitution.
Wayne, where do you come in, or what is your perspective on this whole? I mean, we're here to talk about his CIA connections, but
yeah.
The whole issue that the birther movement and whether or not he was born in Kenya or Indonesia or in other words he's not a natural born U.S. citizen. I mean, is that even material to your investigation, or do you have an opinion?
You're right. The series is up to six parts now because I continue to look into this. And my feeling on the birth certificate issue, and I've talked to people who cover the White House, and the word from the White House is that the Obama people are more than happy to have people pay attention to the birth certificate issue, which I don't think is an issue because it takes the attention off the real issue, and that is his prior employment and also his passport records. That I think the key is the passport records. Remember, in January and February of 2008, it was his passport record that was being rifled through by different factions within the State Department, including employees of a company called the Analysis Corporation, which was run by John Brennan, former CIA guy who helped come up with the rendition policy, the kidnapping policy for George Bush. John Brennan is now sitting in the White House as Obama's deputy national security advisor. Obviously, what was in the passport records may have been very very pertinent to his past employment with the Central Intelligence Agency.
Also, there's the matter of his trip to Pakistan in the early 80s to visit his mother, who I believe was working with an aid agency at the time there, which, as we'll later discuss, may have also been a CIA front. And it would have been illegal for a U.S. citizen to travel to Pakistan at that time, would it not?
Well, this was at a time when the U.S. was building up the Mujahideen forces to fight the Soviets in Afghanistan. Pakistan was rife with Americans at the time. It wasn't illegal for an American to go to Pakistan, although many Americans who were going there, especially the age that Obama was at the time, I mean, he would have been about 20, 21 years old going to Pakistan. I mean, they were obviously, CIA was recruiting people to help the Mujahideen. When he was in Pakistan, he was staying at the home of the Sumros, and when Pervez Musharraf resigned, it was his friend Sumro who became acting president of Pakistan. So he essentially he wasn't in Pakistan staying at bed and breakfast, or he was staying at the homes of the wealthy elites, which flies in the face of this idea that what we heard during the campaign is that you know, he was raising Obama, and then he was being raised by the grandmother. That he was somehow came from you know, a poverty. He came from a very very wealthy set of parents, grandparents, and guardians.
Well, we'll delve into the CIA connections, including his mother and the pivotal role that the University of Hawaii tends to play here, as we discuss further with Wayne Madsen, editor of WayneMadsenReport.com. Nelson Thal, media scientist. We haven't heard from him yet, but we will. Joins me in studio. Stay with us.
Loose lips sink ships, and sometimes corporations. Got something to say? Call Richard Serrett now at 416-360-0740 or toll free in Ontario, 1-866-740-4740.
Nelson Thal, media scientist in studio. On the line, Wayne Madsen, WayneMadsenReport.com, and we're talking about the CIA connections of not only the president, but his family, his mother, father, stepfather, grandparents. Was, in fact, President Barack Obama a creation of the CIA? So we go back and, you know, he often refers to, the president does, his mother as being a hippie. But according to your findings, anything but, Wayne, but let's go back to her her time at the University of Hawaii, when she met Barack's father, taking a Russian language course, which is kind of interesting, at the height of the Cold War. What was that all about?
Well, in 1960, we're told that they met at the University of Hawaii in this Russian language course. Now, remember, Hawaii was in the process of going from territory to a state. The major industry in Hawaii, other than tourism at the time, was military. So the mere idea that in 1960, at the height of the Cold War, on Oahu, at the campus of the University of Hawaii in Manoa, you would have two people, including a person, Barack Obama Sr., who had been sent over as the first African student to the University of Hawaii under a CIA program, and I found these documents in the archive called Airlift Africa. Kenyan nationalist leader Tom Amboya hand-selected some 280 students to be sent to the United States in 1960 to be ramped up to take over these newly independent countries to vie for influence with the Soviet Union and China. Now, remember, in 1960, we had in Moscow the opening of the People's Friendship University, which in 1961 was renamed Patrice Lumumba University. So there was a huge competition between the Soviets and the United States for influence in these soon-to-be independent African countries. And Barack Obama Sr. was a recipient of the CIA's largesse and being sent to Hawaii. We're told that his Obama's mom and dad met for the first time in his Russian language class, yet the Obama campaign released a photograph during the campaign showing Obama's grandfather, Stanley Dunham, his mom's father, welcoming Barack Obama Sr. at Honolulu Airport, which looks like with the presence of uniformed Navy sailors on the tarmac, and there's Barack Sr. Wearing the traditional lei with his luggage on the tarmac, standing next to Stanley Dunham. It seems seems pretty certain that Obama's grandfather knew his father before even his mother knew Barack Obama Sr.
So it almost sounds like a sort of a CIA matchmake here, getting Stanley Dunham together with Barack Sr. at the university. Am I reading too much into it?
No, that's exactly what it sounds like, and I'm quite certain that's what it was, because we're told that Stanley Dunham, the grandfather, was a furniture salesman, yet he had, you know, was transferred from furniture store to furniture store. He was in Seattle. Then he goes to Hawaii. It sounds like some sort of a Central Intelligence Agency cover. There's also another photograph that was released during the campaign showing Barack Obama's mother, Stanley Ann Dunham, wearing a school uniform. She was probably about 7 years old at the time, seven or eight. The initials on it are NDJ, and it's in a sash off to one side, stylized NDJ. And people have looked at that, and they've determined that that stands for Notre Dame de Jamour, which is a private Catholic school in Beirut, Lebanon. So here again, we have another indication that his mother grew up in a family of CIA employees.
In other words, her father, if he was selling furniture, suddenly he was posted to Beirut, which is kind of odd in the 1950s.
Absolutely. Perfect cover, though, for Central Intelligence Agency people. And then we see, of course, the matchmaking at the University of Hawaii, especially the influence of the East-West Center at the university, which, again, here we have the East-West Center outreach to Asia to groom Asian leaders for positions in government, a well-known CIA front that works closely with the Asia Foundation, which is another CIA front.
But when
so
you say a well...
got all these indicators.
Excuse me, Wayne. When you say a well-known CIA front operation, referring to the East-West Center, which was at the University of Hawaii, or you mentioned the U.S. Agency for International Development and the Ford Foundation, all of these things Stanley Ann Dunham was involved with or worked for. She worked for a time at the Ford Foundation. When you say it's well-known, I mean, but it's easy to say that, but is it... I mean, do you have the documentation to prove it?
Right. I mean, you go back to the CIA archives and the articles that they clipped through the 60s and the 70s and into the early 80s, you find all the references to these organizations being affiliated by many different publications, many different journalists with the CIA, of course. Why would the CIA keep those articles? Well, obviously, they wanted to know what the people were writing about them and obviously thought that they were important enough to stick in their archives.
So Barack Obama Sr. is brought over in a CIA-inspired airlift, the U.S. trying to win the hearts and minds of young East Africans in order to act as a sort of a countervailing force against those in the Soviet Union that were also trying to do the same thing in that region of Africa. He studies there. He weds Stanley Ann Dunham. They have a child, and then he leaves Called back to Kenya to work with the nationalist Tom Oboya to help overthrow the government?
No, he actually goes back to Kenya, but en route he goes to Harvard University to get his PhD. He meets another American woman there, marries her, and she goes back to Nairobi with him. Now, when he goes back to Nairobi, because he was in the same tribe as Tom Amboya, the Luo tribe, the dominant tribe, got all the key positions upon independence in 63, and that was Jomo Kenyatta, the Kikuyus. And the Luos were basically considered second-class citizens. So Barack Obama Sr., with all these academic credentials, who probably felt he should have been the Minister of Finance, never achieved that. He got low-level positions. But in 1969, Tom Amboya, who was basically the CIA's guy who kept track of people like Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana at these various independence meetings throughout Africa. Nkrumah, of course, was overthrown by the CIA in 66, 1 year after Lolo Sotoro, who Stanley Ann Dunham would meet later and marry and take young Obama to Indonesia. That was 1 year. Nkrumah was overthrown 1 year after Sukarno, President Sukarno of Indonesia, was also overthrown in a CIA coup, which Lolo Sotoro was involved with as a colonel for General Suharto, who was the CIA's man in Indonesia. So we have all these connections of Obama's family to these various coup d'etats around the world. 1969, Tom Amboy is assassinated, and Barack Obama Sr. testified at the trial of his accused assassin. It's not known who actually assassinated Tom Amboya. Some people blamed it on the Chinese, who thought he was too close to the American CIA.
Well, let's come back and we'll discuss Barack Obama's stepfather, Lulu Sotoro, who I believe also met Stanley Ann Dunham at the University of Hawaii. Then we'll talk about Sotoro's involvement in the coup. There were, I believe, over 1 million citizens killed in that that year of living dangerously. And we'll continue to connect the dots. Wayne Madsen from WayneMadsenReport.com, talking about the CIA connections of the Barack Obama family. Nelson Thal standing by with comments live in studio. Back with more of The Conspiracy Show. Stay with us.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
I wish they'd pass a law to where all Democrats and Republicans had to wear NASCAR racing suits. Because if you look at the NASCAR drivers, it tells who their sponsors are. And if they do that, we could then become informed voters because we'd know who owns them.
Curiosity? Or did the devil make you do it? Whatever the reason, welcome back to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio, AM 740. To talk to Richard, call 416-360-0740 or toll free in Ontario at 1-866-740-4740.
Next week, the return of remote viewer Douglas Cottrell to the program. We'll talk Earth changes. And later on tonight, last half hour of the show, I want to talk about coincidence. If you believe in such a beast. And I'll go into some more details about some of the strange coincidences I encountered on a recent trip up to Ottawa while investigating a perpetual motion machine. Wayne Madsen is with us, a Washington, D.C.-based investigative journalist, and in-studio Nelson Thal, media scientist, talking about whether or not President Obama was a creation of the CIA and the CIA legacy underpinning his family's history. It seems strange that Stanley Ann Dunham, I believe, you know, she's at the University of Hawaii in 1959, and 1965, she's still there, and this time she meets her next husband, who would be the stepfather of the president, Lolo Sotoro. What was she still doing at the University of Hawaii 6 years later? Was she teaching, or why was she still there?
No, it seems like she was some sort of a career student. It took her a long time to matriculate to finally get her PhD in economic anthropology. So in 65, she meets Lola Sotoro, who's basically attending the East-West Center. Suhardo, who's working for the CIA to overthrow Sukarno, who was considered to be a communist, calls all these Indonesian students back, and then as Sotoro returns to Indonesia, Suhardo makes him a colonel in the army, and of course then they set about to overthrow President Sukarno in this very bloody coup, which was, you mentioned The Year of Living Dangerously, that was that movie that came out in the early 1980s featuring Mel Gibson, Sigourney Weaver, and Linda Hunt, who actually played a man in the movie. I think won an Academy Award for that.
Yes.
This was the bloody put down of the Sukarno government and a resulting massacre of mostly Indonesian ethnic Chinese citizens and also accused and alleged members of the Indonesian Communist Party. They're married. Stanley and Dunham takes Barack Obama, 7 years old, to Indonesia 2 years after this bloody coup in 1967, and Dunham immediately gets this job with USAID, where she's working with Japanese farmers on what is essentially the micro financing project, which was being run out of the USAID at the embassy.
A CIA front.
Yeah, it's CIA front. CIA front all the way. I went back and looked at a book that came out in 68 called Who's Who in the CIA. It's very hard to get. I found a copy in Britain, and they're listed as a USAID officer, economic officer at the embassy is one of the CIA agents. So obviously this is the guy who was in charge of that particular project, which he was working on.
So Wayne Madsen, to summarize here, the president's stepfather was very involved in this bloody coup that resulted in the death of about a million ethnic Indonesian Chinese. And his father was a part of a CIA-sponsored airlift from East Africa. His mother has worked for several CIA-fronted companies. Now, back to the Indonesian question. You mentioned in one of the three parts that President Barack Obama has twice, at the time of the publication, twice postponed a state visit to Indonesia. Does this have anything to do with the fact that he's afraid that his stepfather's bloody past will catch up with him?
I believe it does. First of all, Indonesia has a very vibrant press. They have many different newspapers. We also should remember that there was a statue of young Barack Obama as a child erected in Jakarta, and it was taken down not too long ago. I think, obviously the White House knows that a state visit by Obama will not only have the interest of the U.S. media, which, of course, the interest of the U.S. media might last only a couple of hours with the, the retention span of people in this country. But in Indonesia, it will get a lot of attention. And the Indonesian media, the newspapers, and their websites will be looking very closely at his links in Indonesia. I don't know this for a fact, that these two visits have been postponed because they know that once Obama Air Force One touches down in Jakarta, it could open up a virtual hornet's nest.
It's one thing to detail his parents' grandparents alleged in the CIA, but it's the old saying, you know, the sins of the father visited upon the son. Why should Barack Obama, be tainted by his stepfather and his father and his mother or his grandparents' involvement in the CIA?
Well, after Obama graduates from Columbia University, in his book he said he went to work for a company in Manhattan for a year. Well, it wasn't just any company. It happened to be a company called Business International Corporation, which, again, here we have another firm that had been long associated with CIA front activities. Elliot Haynes, the son of the founder, actually admitted to the New York Times that four journalists working for Business International Corporation had been CIA cover and sent abroad. We know that Obama edited two newsletters for this company, but the mere fact that he doesn't even give the name of the company in the book, it looks like he's trying to hide something.
Let's work on Nelson.
And there's been a lot written. John Pilger has also written about Business International Corporation being involved in CIA activities in Australia, especially having to do with the 1975 constitutional overthrow of Prime Minister Gough Whitlam.
Let's work media scientist Nelson Thal into the discussion.
It's great being here. Rich, this is terrific. It's almost after midnight, so we can come out and play. The ruling elite have gone to sleep almost. And this is a great report that Wayne Madsen's developed. I mean, he's to be commended as a journalist. It's just a great piece. And it's really, for me, very exciting and interesting because you and I have been talking for decades about how in all these incidences, there's always some connection to Dallas. And I love his report. Wayne points out that this connection between the Project Mockingbird, which McLuhan would find of interest because McLuhan, the media guru, would find it interesting watching intelligence agencies develop programs to try and influence the media towards their bias.
For those not aware, Project Mockingbird was what?
Project Mockingbird was developed under Cord Meyer. And this is the key. This is the connection with Dealey again. Cord Meyer was on E. Howard Hunt on his deathbed, named Cord Meyer and some other associates that we don't need to go into right now, but a number of other associates, William King Harvey and David Sanchez Morales, in working on planning and carrying out the Kennedy assassination. So Cord Meyer is behind Project Mockingbird, which gives rise to Obama.
Well, explain that. Project Mockingbird and its connection to this company that Obama was working with after Columbia.
Once again, he was trained at St. Paul's School and attended Yale and was a member of Scroll and Key Society. Now, we know the Bushes are Skull and Bones.
Okay,
see the movie? So you've got these Skull and Bones, all these groups out of Yale that really have tremendous
power.
But
Project Mockingbird was what?
The daughter, the child of Cord Meyer.
Yeah, no, but what was it supposed
to do?
It
was to influence the media, to spread disinformation.
Okay, so that's the company.
To spread disinformation in order to start these projects. I mean, Gulf of Tonkin, Admiral, they had to spread the lie about that they were attacked. 9/11, they got Barbara Olson to claim that his wife was on the plane. These are Skull and Bones groups that are involved and that twist the news to where they want it to go. The owners of the system.
So Wayne, company that Barack Obama was involved with after that he was hired by in New York after Columbia. This is essentially a part of Project Mockingbird. Does that make sense?
Well, this company had tremendous access to people around the world. It finally was sold to the Economist Intelligence Unit in 1986. But in the 1960s, they had roundtable discussion seminars with people like Soviet Premier Alexei Kosygin, Haile Selassie of Ethiopia, Tito of Yugoslavia, Franco of Spain. So This was not just a newsletter operation. This was a pretty well-connected, moneyed operation that maintained a business address at One Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza across from the United Nations building in Manhattan. So we're not talking about some fly-by-night operation. As a matter of fact, when Obama last year was chairing the Security Council, I know a journalist at the UN, and he had the opportunity to ask Obama a question, and I said, you should have asked him how it felt to be back in his old neighborhood, because he used to work across the street at One Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza. Of course, didn't ask a question. Most of the press won't ask the president any questions about his past, because the White House press secretary and Rahm Emanuel put the word out that that's off limits, anything about his past. But I did find something very interesting. Richard Helms, CIA director, 1971, a memo to the director of science and technology at the CIA, stating that he wanted to beef up the CIA's behavioral science programs, and he mentions five universities by name: MIT, University of Michigan, UCLA, and the fifth one mentioned the University of Hawaii.
Okay, let's just hold on to that. We'll come back and we'll talk about MK Ultra, Project Artichoke, and the connection to the University of Hawaii, which is leading us where? The possibility that the present occupant of the White House is a real live Manchurian candidate? We'll discuss when The Conspiracy Show returns. Stay with us.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.